I suppose you have homework to do.
You have no idea how boring everything was before I met you. Actions, character, our English teacher says. I think it means that if we never did anything, we wouldn't be anybody. And I never did anything before I met you. And sometimes I think no one's ever done anything in this whole stupid country, apart from you.
So hi and welcome to the Only Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Damien.
And this is Douglas.
And it's another week of podcasting. I don't know why I just said that.
Yeah. Could you make it sound any worse? Could you bring at least a small amount, a micron of energy to this podcast? I know you're busy banging other podcasts out, right? With other people, and you don't have a lot of energy left for us, right? But at least Andrew, when you're, you know, cheating on somebody, you have to pretend, or it doesn't work, right? Pretend that you're still interested.
What if there's an understanding in the relationship that allows for it?
There's no such understanding. No one has, that has never worked ever, right? There's no such thing as an open relationship. It has never happened in the history of relationships. Right? People have feelings. Feelings get hurt. We know what you're doing. Right? We cannot stop you because you're too far away. At least pretend. Right? We were your first loves, Andrew. Right? Why are you treating us like this?
So, hi guys. It's the podcast. We should go.
But what anyways, are we talking about?
Moving on. I wanted us to talk about this film entitled Smash.
That was good.
I'm gonna tell you something.
Yeah?
No! Last night I ended up smoking crack. I think I need to slow down.
Yeah? I'll help you. I have the most amazing wife on the planet.
Don't take this wrong way.
What?
I would prefer it if you didn't drink.
Starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Aaron Paul and Nick Offerman.
Is this the movie version of the NBC TV show?
No, it is not the movie version of the NBC TV show. This is a film which is about a couple, a married couple played by Aaron Paul and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Kate and Charlie, who are alcoholics, and that is pretty much the basis of their relationship. And after an incident at her job, Kate kind of gets somewhat of an awakening and decides that she wants to quit drinking, and the film is about her journey as she attempts to go sober. I had previously seen this film.
To go sober, Andrew?
Go sober.
That's what it's called.
That's what I'm going to call it. I previously seen this film, and I felt like it was a movie that was worth talking about. And even at the very least, it was something I wanted to revisit, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. The movie is something which, on first viewing, it almost feels like it's too short. Because this is a movie which it doesn't even hit 90 minutes. I have seen, and I've talked about, a lot of films that discuss alcoholism and addiction of any kind. And I kind of always feel that it comes off preachy. This movie, I don't get that feeling. But at the same time, I never get that feeling that our characters, Kate and Charlie and their relationship, that all of these things end up mattering that much because of how quickly we move through this movie. I mean, literally, when the movie starts, it opens to the two of them in bed, and they are waking up for a day, and Kate has pissed the bed, and she's off to work. So we kind of get to the level of how alcoholic these people are. Is that how you'd say that?
Sure.
in this world. And it's not until around the 15 minute mark that we have our main character Kate say, look, I think I need to stop. And that's when everything kind of kicks off. That's even when we just first see the title card, smashed. And I don't know how you guys felt about this, but were you bothered by how quick we moved from drinking to not drinking to people, to the tension that came between these two people where one was drinking and the other wasn't, and how one pushed and pulled the other? Damien?
No, not really.
I think for me, one of the main points was the relationship that was created between Winstead and Nick Offerman, who is, I think they call him the vice principal of the school.
Yeah.
And he is the guy who introduces Kate to Alcoholics Anonymous, who says, you know, if you really think this is a problem for you, as it obviously is, if you feel you want to make this step, mm-hmm. I can help you with this group that I have.
When you start lying to children about being pregnant, that's probably a good idea. Maybe you should stop this.
Yeah, maybe.
Also, the people at AA served moist chocolate cake, so, you know.
No, that wasn't at AA. That was at the school.
but wherever it was moist. Okay?
It was very moist. What I really and truly love about this movie are all of the performances. Like, there's a scene later in the movie where Kate falls off the wagon. It's pretty much, I don't know if I can call it this, a trope of this kind of movie where the person has gotten to a point, but we have to then break their character and show them falling off the wagon. And there's a scene where she comes home to her husband and she is drunk. And her husband, after seeing her for the last, I don't know how long it was in the movie world, was it 4 months or 5 months, where she has been sober and good with trying to manage her life around him and around alcohol, that we can see that he finally shows valid concern for her, and that the way that she plays off that scene, I really enjoyed it. I really bought that she had reached her final breaking point. Douglas, what did you think about this movie?
This movie, I was not a big fan. I thought it was mediocre, sounds a bit harsh. But it wasn't anything great. It's a story that we've all seen before. It stars two very, I don't know, smallish actors. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who... well, the fame I know
don't
her
you
from
dare
is,
call her small. She was a cheerleader in Death Proof.
I know she was. She was in Death Proof. She was in ER. She's been in a couple of other things. But I wouldn't say that she's really done anything big or, you know, made a big splash. Oh, yes, she was in okay, great. Also, you've got Aaron Paul, whose biggest thing right now is Breaking Bad, which is great. But at the same time, he feels like in Breaking Bad and in this movie and in everything else he's ever been in, he's kind of playing himself. He kind of feels
like season 2 Jesse Pinkman.
Yeah. This film does a couple of things that I'm not a big fan of. One, it calls itself out. It pulls a Babe Ruth when exactly. Nick Offerman essentially points to where this movie is going to go. he sits down Miss Moist. I mean, what's her name?
Mary Elizabeth.
We're not going to get Winston, that word out of Moist. This, are we?
So he sits down Miss Winstead and tells her, listen, I was an alcoholic, I was married, and I became not an alcoholic, and my wife didn't stop drinking. Therefore, we broke up, and things did not end well. And guess how this movie went? You know, this movie went in exactly that direction.
Not exactly, but that is what happened.
The general...
It went exactly that. I was being a jerk.
Yeah, you are. You're an asshole. And the movie starts off, as you see, with her wetting the bed, which was, you know, a nice gem.
That's what you want when you sit down to watch a movie.
Yeah. And
start out with pissing.
Exactly. This movie literally took the piss. There's certain things about this movie, I guess, that will appeal to certain people, because this is definitely a big heartstring puller, right? It's a movie about alcoholics. It's a movie where you see at least one alcoholic reach to her lowest lows. It doesn't actually aggrandize those lows, though. It doesn't really put them up on a pedestal like a lot of movies do, and kind of show you up close and personal and be like, listen guys, if you didn't already know, this is bad. Right? So I applaud this movie for that, for the fact that it didn't actually overblow things as badly as it could have. But it still did, and it's hard not to in a movie like this, it still did show, you know, some really bad things, as Damien mentioned, you know, lying to children about, one, being pregnant, and then two, having a miscarriage. I don't know. The story was just kind of ordinary.
It felt like one of those.
Yeah, it's just, you know.
And you know what the worst part is? I can't think of a lot of other movies that I've seen about this specific topic.
Mm-hmm.
But it still felt like I've seen like this
exactly.
exact
I've seen
movie
this before.
Somewhere before.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't have anything special about it. There's no great acting here.
I do like the acting. I don't agree with that.
Her
performance is pretty good.
I'm not saying that they acted poorly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that there was no Matt Damon, or there was no, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis going on. You know?
Let us... from now on, we cannot. I think that is an unfair measuring stick. We cannot ask for Daniel Day-Lewis' performance out of anything.
Please
never say that again.
You try to use that stick, but I'm willing to throw it out there that I feel Mary Elizabeth Winstead in this movie is almost as good as Jennifer Lawrence was in Silver Linings Playbook.
But yeah, but Jennifer Lawrence only won that because she didn't win for Winter's Bone.
Yeah.
That is it.
Taking the Oscars out of it. Taking the Oscars out of it. I know Douglas adored Jennifer's performance in...
I don't know I'd say that. No, I'm not sure what I said in the podcast, but here is what I remember from watching that movie. One, nobody really acted that well, again, in Silver Linings Playbook. I just love the story and I love the movie itself. And there was enough pretty decent acting going on to carry it. That's how I felt about Silver Linings Playbook. So no, Andrew, I would not have put Jennifer Lawrence up there in like the a pantheon of acting.
Andrew, I understand what you're trying to say and I agree with you about that. I think her performance is about as strong as Jennifer Lawrence's performance in Silver Linings Playbook. I think that is the strong part of this film. I think that is the only strong part of this film. Watching her performance, watching her transition from this... because most movies about alcoholism are geared at men. It is a man who is alcoholic and he lashes out and is violent, and then, you know, he becomes not alcoholic, there's a relapse, and then, you know, they try to paint a rosy picture at the end, or paint a picture that this is just how it is, and whatever. But her performance, I think, is the one strong point for the movie. So I'd agree with Andrew with that. As to the rest of things, though, I don't think the rest of things are that strong. But you're saying, let's just ignore the whole acting thing.
I'm remembering a scene closer to the end where she's giving a speech, and that was actually pretty good. Maybe I can be swayed, but this movie is literally a cliche. It plays it off well, in the sense that a lot of the times, once I see a cliche, I climb up and I say, no, I'm not going to watch this movie. This movie is horrible. Right. But I was essentially there. The movie had me the whole way. If not in the sense, or if not as much as another movie that I would have liked much more. But it wasn't, however, the best of movies. I think if I was to try and give this, you know, this doesn't go on the Gilliamometer. The Gilliamometer doesn't
We've come up with
like
a perfect scale that we're using.
This, I think this gets a 2. Right. This gets a 2 out of 4 for me. It wasn't.
It's not
horrible.
Garbage.
It's not bad. Right. It's not garbage. But there's no way I could put this on the good side of the scale.
Right.
You know, it's just not good enough. It's kind of just too average.
So all right, we've kind of alluded to it a lot, and I won't blatantly throw it out there, but how did the moist scene play out for you guys?
It was an inappropriate thing to say. It was kind of out. It was just something that all of a sudden, you know, was like, wow, he said that? Okay, but I didn't.
No,
other than that, it
no
didn't really give
like
me
that.
Any sort of reaction.
Maybe,
I don't know. What
maybe in
you?
America you can get away with saying things like that, but have you ever been anywhere and heard somebody say anything like that? No. Alright, so I'll just give my impressions on this film. Andrew already knows, which is why he's not showing the movie with praise up front, because Andrew really likes this movie, and Andrew is doing what he always does, which is kind of pander so that he doesn't sound too far out of line, because he doesn't want me or you shouting at him that he's wrong. But this is one of those movies where Andrew liking the movie is not anything that I'd go, no, Andrew, you are definitely wrong for liking this movie, and here's why, and point to things. There's something in the movie that Andrew has latched onto that clearly Douglas and I have not. The movie being short is not a plus or a negative. It is just the movie. I think Weinstein's performance is fantastic, and what's the dude's name?
Aaron Paul?
Right, Aaron Paul has been playing himself now for all his life. And so, I just expected that performance from him. I, before this movie, doubted that Elizabeth Winstead could act at all. She proved me wrong, which is good. As I said, the story felt like I've never seen this specific story before. But the entire time I watched it, I went, I kind of know, and that is to the point that Douglas made, that it is kind of cliche. I think the ending is weak. I think they had so much that they could have done with the ending, and the ending that they chose, it didn't feel earned. Again, Douglas said this, there was kind of foreshadowing at the start. I don't know. The movie is not bad. I never said that about the movie. I wouldn't recommend this movie to anybody though. But I don't see anybody coming out of this movie and going, this movie is complete garbage, etc., etc. But with the exception of Andrew, I didn't think there was anyone that was going to come out of the film and go, this movie is a good movie, and I think that, you know, I'd recommend this to whoever. Andrew's point about, you know, the movie not being preachy is all well and good, but if you're going to make a movie like this, that is, you're going to have to come down on that side at some point. I don't see how you're going to make a movie about alcoholism and the negative effects of alcoholism without coming up preaching. You've already decided that, you know, these things that people do by drinking too much is a bad thing. So in some sense, you're already preaching. I mean, and I don't think there's a way to do that without, you know, coming out. I mean, there's ways to be heavy-handed about it, which is what Andrew is, I think Andrew is saying, you know, it's not going, you know, alcohol bad and everything. Does, this is the worst.
Well, it does still do that. It does go alcohol bad, because every meeting
that
you see that her go to,
excessive alcohol is bad. it wasn't like, don't drink alcohol, believe in God, and everything will be alright. It didn't go that
route. Which is what I hate. And I mean, there's another movie which I've watched, and you guys can probably check out if you want to see the ridiculous, preachy version, entitled The Days of Wine and Roses, which was with Jack Lemmon back in the 50s, I believe. Which was him playing an alcoholic and to deal with Alcoholics Anonymous and such. But this movie, it definitely never feels like it's going, guys, this is something which everyone should stay away from. Like, alcohol is the devil and it will do, like, I mean, the movie, it definitely says that alcoholism and the abuse of alcohol and using it in excess is bad and it's not good for the person. But more than that, it kind of hones in on the fact that these people, that they won't ever be ready to change until they decide to change themselves. And for Kate, it was this moment where she went and she decided to do crack for no random reason other than it was there, and it was because she was drunk and made a stupid decision. And it goes even further than that, and like, the lows that we see at that point is pretty damn low, and it would make sense for her to get that initiative to be like, maybe I should give this other thing a try for once and see how that works out.
My question is, I've known a lot of school teachers, and none of them have any time to do anything. How does she find time to drink all the time? Where does that teaching is like the most draining job I can think of. You have to sit in a classroom.
Are these teachers teaching 2 year olds?
Some of them are. 2 year olds are the dumbest children. They literally know nothing. You're teaching them absolutely everything, and it is draining because you have to impart knowledge onto things that are dumb and will not and cannot learn for themselves. All right, I think I want to hear Andrew's, unfiltered review of the movie. I think Andrew is being a little bit cautious about his feelings on the movie, and I don't want that. That's not the Andrew I like. I prefer Andrew being bold and liking something and then hating him for it than all right,
you want the truth about me and this movie?
Yes, is I that know you love
for,
it.
For the most part, I agree with you guys. What? I believe that this movie isn't that good. It's a movie that I wanted to love, right? It's a movie that I had the exact same feelings that you guys had when I first saw it at TIFF last year. And based on the fact that there were these parts that I liked and I felt were so good. I mean, there's a scene to the end, and I brought it up already, the breakdown scene where, and there's this one shot which is like I don't think it's, it might be as much as a minute, which is like a continuous shot from when she you have a close up of them together to them eventually being on the couch. And between those two points, there's no cuts. And it works for me in those little bits. But somehow when I finish the movie, when I press stop and the movie's over and I start to think about the movie, I don't ever really think I adored it. I think that I liked this piece, I liked that piece, I liked that piece, but I didn't love the whole movie. And at the same time, I found that within the last 2 days, I've watched this movie twice. So I've seen this movie 3 times in total at this point, and I still haven't come down going, oh my goodness, this is the greatest thing under the sun. It's just a movie that I kinda like, but I can't really find a way to justify it 100%. And that's kind of why I'm being very cautious in how I'm talking about this movie to you guys. Because at the end of the day, I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is just great in this movie. And even like in the early scenes when she and Jesse Pinkman, I'm just going to call him Jesse from now on, is drunk off their ass, that wait, they so, are so even...
Does that make her Jesse's girl?
Pretty much, I guess. When we see her in those moments, which are, as we said, her lowest moments, she, even as she says in the final speech, she is adorable. She is a person that I like, even though she ends up smoking crack. She ends up halfway across the town not knowing what the hell happened to her that night because she was that drunk, lying to children because she was hungover and threw up in class and didn't have the balls to tell the child, no, I'm not pregnant, I'm just feeling sick this morning. It's kind of crazy, and I apologize if I had to put you through mediocrity for me to affirm my position on this movie, but I still want to like the movie, guys.
Guys, if we're going to start apologizing for things, I think there have been a lot of transgressions against cinema that all of us have put forward, yes. Mostly Douglas.
I still get the Butcher Boy Award. Thank you very much.
No shit. Yes. You shouldn't be thankful.
Douglas, you have numbers 1, 2, and 3, okay?
Pretty sure, yeah.
What's 2 and 3?
The David Bowie movie, The Man Who Fell to Earth.
That Catherine Bigelow zombie movie.
No, that is not the top. I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm sorry now I ever went away. Every night and day I go and stay. I'm coming home, baby. I'm not home. Coming home, baby, now. You know I'm waiting for you. I'm coming home now real soon. You've been gone. Coming home, baby, now. You don't know what I'm doing. I'm coming home, I know. Before we get there, mm-hmm. We have our questions.
No.
Nah. It's a bit quick. Last week I asked everyone what were their favorite, because the Place Beyond the Pines started getting released, what were their favorite cinematic cops and robbers, cops and criminals, and the internet responded. At Ike Chad responded Tom Hanks and Leonardo DiCaprio from Catch Me If You Can.
Alright,
that movie has a lot of love here.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The book is also pretty good.
At Millie Clay responded for the cops, she said Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg in the other guys, because she was feeling in a silly mood.
All right.
And for the criminals, she said Silva from Skyfall. Who doesn't like a Bond villain? Kashiki Harrison over on Facebook brought up The Departed, and yeah, guys, that's like one of the best police movies ever.
Yeah, if only it wasn't ripped off from another better police
Damien,
movie.
That movie's bad. Go away. Simon Brown, who's been on his podcast, he brought up Donnie Brasco, and I can't remember any police in that movie, but there are lots of criminals.
Donnie Brasco. No, there's no police in Donnie Brasco.
He's more the cop on the robber.
Oh yes, that's right. Donnie Brasco is police, Andrew. Yeah. Come on.
Tim Joseph brought up Heat, and of course that's the Al Pacino, Robert De Niro movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's great. And the last one, Courtney Small, from Thoughts from a Big Thoughts from a Small Mind, brought up, for criminals, he wanted to highlight the usual suspects, which I'm happy to see. I lent my coworker this movie, because he's a guy who comes in and says Alice in Wonderland is great, and I shudder, and I'm like, here, have a good movie, go and watch this. And he came back and he's like, that movie's great, and I'm happy. And for the cops, he brought up The French Connection. Why don't we ever talk about The French Connection? I love that movie.
What exactly do you want us to say about that movie? Because I can't say.
Have you
no
seen that movie,
you.
Douglas?
I don't think I've seen the whole thing, but I've seen probably most of it.
Right. There's Cars. The Cars scene is awesome. There's the start, and then there's the end. And the movie's pretty good. Hey, guys.
All right.
The French Connection is tremendous. And you should watch
on
it.
On a complete side note, a couple episodes ago, I asked about movies that were that had things that were so American to the film's detriment. And I found a movie which fits this. You guys want to guess what movie this is?
What is this movie, Andrew?
Killing Them Softly.
I'm sorry. What's the detriment part? I just thought. Do you people understand what the word detriment means?
That movie is horrendous. Wow. That movie was scored by NPR.
Hold
and
on. Is it the same movie that me and Douglas saw?
I don't know if you saw
honestly,
a different movie.
I can see where this movie will be divisive.
No, I don't. No.
So while I do believe Andrew is wrong.
All right. Remember
I
what I said? I
can't really blame him.
5 minutes ago that I prefer when Andrew just gives us one. I'm redacting that statement.
I'm sorry, guys. Like, even the ending speech, which I thought was an awesome speech in itself, like, it just goes further to go, America! And I'm like, oh, I want to kill this movie. It's so bad.
No, that is... That speech is probably the most anti-American thing anybody has ever said. It is the one of the few movies that looks at the shortcomings of American capitalism and points directly at what people usually hold up as. See, this is where, you know, America is great. It is what the founding fathers did. And he rightfully looked at all of that and called BS to all of that. That movie, first of all, most of that movie has nothing to do with America. There's no Americanism.
Well, I mean, other than the ridiculous amount of listening to George Bush speeches and the economy is crashing podcasts in
the
background.
They set the movie in that time and they use that as a backdrop to tell you,
that was just the America part that was annoying me. But I mean, there's a lot of other elements in this movie which I didn't like, which I don't want to go into because it just gets really long. But yeah, I didn't like that movie, guys. I'm sorry. But anyways, the question I want to ask this week, people are starting to get to watch the Jurassic Park 3D re-release.
Yeah,
and
finally.
Finally,
I get to watch a movie
and
900 years ago.
And while I don't want to support 3D conversions and such, I do enjoy seeing a lot of these revered films re-released in theaters. I mean, we all like seeing movies. We like seeing movies in the best situation whatsoever. What's better than going to the theater and seeing it on the biggest screen you can find
in Jamaica?
Is
that like a question?
What would be better than going to Paris? That would be, thank you, Damien.
Buying the Blu-ray, sitting down and watching it at
home. So what I wanted to know was if you could pick only one movie in existence to be re-released, it doesn't have to be converted to 3D. If you could pick only one movie that you would want re-released so you could go to the theater and watch it again, what movie would it be?
My pick is obvious. What's the most
obvious pick of all time. Actually, I have two, and they're both near and dear to my heart. They'll never happen, but at least one might happen, but the other one won't. The first one is Rambo First Blood Part 2, of course. The second one would be Torque. I'd pay a lot of money to go and watch Torque on a giant screen again.
Oh my.
Yeah, those are my two. There are better movies that should clearly be in the list, but the two that I want the most are those two.
I hear you. I don't know. I don't know what movies I'd want to get.
All of them? All of the movies.
Yeah.
If there's a way
You know what might be nice to watch in a big theater scene is Indiana Jones.
That was actually re-released in the States last year. Yeah. Sadly, it didn't come out.
They put out number 4 not too long ago, and you hated that.
Yeah, no. Re-released. I didn't say new movies. No.
Well, they could re-release Kingdom of the Crystal Skull for you. You could go watch that.
Right. And watch as half the movie theaters in the world burned down. There's just so many. There's movies that we love that we clearly want to watch on a big screen, but it would be just us.
Yeah.
Who is going to come with me to watch Ikiru and Kerb?
Nobody. I'll come. I'll come. We can cry together.
I want a Sunday. And I'd like to know it's more than love at first sight. Give me a Sunday kind of life. And I want a love that's on the square.
I have a competition. I want no one else to succeed. I hate most people.
That part of me is gone. Working and not succeeding. All my failures has left me. I just don't care.
Well, if it's in me, it's in you. There are times when I look at people and I see nothing worth liking. I want to earn enough money I can get away from everyone.
So tying in with this week's review of Smashed, I wanted to talk about our top 5 films about addiction. And I kind of left it open to not be about alcohol or alcoholism or alcoholic characters, but to be about generally addiction in any form. I mean, I was even thinking about this and I'm like, could I use a film like Wuthering Heights and say that Heathcliff just couldn't give up that woman and he was addicted to her? But I didn't want to go that far.
Sure, why not?
Oh, I can tell you that both myself and Damien have gone that far.
Yes.
So, unless there's anything you guys want to say, I'll kick it off.
Sure.
Go ahead.
This list is going to be terrible, though. I'm going to put that up front. I put a lot of BS in this list. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So my number 5 is a movie that I'm sure I'm stealing from somebody right now. And it has to be Danny Boyle's Trainspotting.
Fuck you! You stole it from me!
The most obvious pick.
Because, I mean, what else is there other than watching Ewan McGregor go deep into one of the most filthiest toilets in the world because he needs more drugs? The movie is one that I probably haven't watched in the last 4 years, but I still remember things like babies on ceilings and them going to Scotland and just being out there, just going like, it's Scotland, guys. It's kind of shitty. Let's go back. And even the guy who just randomly gets into fights, it's an insane movie. And that opening sequence with that song, what's it called? Your Life? Gotta Choose Your Life or something like that. And he gives that monologue going about, you have to choose death, you have to choose life, drugs, football, something to be your passion. It's a great movie. And, you know, I thank Douglas for introducing me to it so I can steal it from his list.
Douglas, I think you should go next. That way you can steal something back from his list.
I could. So, number 5 on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I am stealing something. Just not necessarily from Andrew. And this is specifically because... I just want to let everybody know that this probably should be higher on my list. But I have decided to be an asshole. And so this is the first movie I'm going to call out so that I can steal it from Mr. Damien White himself. It's Half Nelson.
You're a piece of shit. Damn you, motherfuckers.
Half Nelson is a fantastic movie starring one of my big movie crushes at the moment, Ryan Gosling. A movie about... funnily enough, a teacher who finds time to be a full-on drug addict.
Hard drugs,
yeah, some serious drugs. And forms a less than above board relationship with one of his students. It's a great movie, a great character study, and this was where I think he showed me his true chops for the first time. Damien.
All right. So my first pick is Rambo First Blood Part 2. Rambo is addicted to stabbing people with a knife. All right. All right. So thank you guys for laughing. I'm going to just let myself out. The first one is unconventional. Because I didn't really want to pick obvious picks for this. My first pick is Lord of the Rings, the entire series. Frodo is addicted to... In fact, everyone who comes in contact with the ring becomes addicted to both having and wearing that ring. It drives one character straight to madness. And over the course of 3 movies, drives the other character to the brink of madness. To the point where someone had to bite off... and someone has to bite off your finger. In order for you to give up a ring, you've gone too far. You've gone way, way too far. And when you refuse to give up a ring or to destroy something that is going to lead to the destruction of you and everything you know and love, and you still refuse, you've taken it too far. And so I think Lord of the Rings, while unconventional, is definitely, first, it's one of the best movies of all time. And in terms of addiction, it shows you just how far some people will go once you've become addicted to a thing. And so Lord of the Rings is my number 5. Andrew Robinson.
So my number 4, I don't know if I'm stealing this from anyone, but it would definitely be Douglas, if anyone... It ranks high on the Gilliamometer.
Shit.
And
that was going to be my number one.
It definitely has a lot of drugs. I mean, when you can find a scene in which Johnny Depp is walking around and all he sees are dinosaurs because he's taken a puff of mescaline, all you can think about is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Because this movie is that insane. And you brought this upon yourself, sir, because this is an audible.
Oh, God damn it. Alright, so my number 4 pick for this list. This addiction list. Let's see, what shall I say? I've got a bunch of things to choose from here, but I think I'm going to choose another proper movie. I'm not getting into the bullshit yet.
Don't say it.
Oh, wow. I hope I'm not stealing from Damien now, because this is not my intention, but it is Rachel getting married. Oh. I love this movie. This movie is yet another great character study, yet another film that introduced me to somebody who, well, at least Ryan Gosling, I didn't really have any preconceived notions of, but I did have that for, oh, wow, her name eludes me.
Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, thank you very much. She started off, at least in my mind, with things like The Princess Diary. And that just kind of, you know, made me write her off to nothing. But then...
Devil Wears Prada, you saw that and you went, "This, she's terrific."
No, I did not.
I dreamed a dream.
This movie was fantastic. She was stellar, superb. I mean, every superlative that you can think of, she was that in this film. And it was just, you know, she again was, you know, a big addict.
My next pick is a recent movie, The Master. Joaquin Phoenix was clearly addicted to sex and liquor, and it made him make decisions that he otherwise shouldn't have made. Now, this movie didn't really explore, you know, alcoholism or sex addiction to, you know, how normal movies, but when you see his behavior, when you see how erratic he is, it is clear that he is in the throes of both alcoholism and sex addiction. And it makes him a wonderful character to watch for the entire run of the movie. I think anyone who hasn't seen this should clear time and watch this movie. And I again will say that I'm very sad that Daniel Day-Lewis had to come out in a movie that same year, because both him and Philip Seymour Hoffman got screwed the second Lincoln came.
Yeah, they did.
So my number three is still about addiction, but definitely it doesn't try to say that it's actually addiction it's talking about. It's just a lot of drug use. And it comes from one of the most unconventional places in the world, and it's the Bad Lieutenant port of call, New Orleans.
Look here, man. What's wrong with the two of you? Seriously? Am I just going to just ignore all of Molly's?
Because, I mean, when you talk about a movie where its opening scene shows our police officer, played by Nicolas Cage, holding up a couple in a car in a back alley, only to force them to give him their drugs and make the woman that make sweet, sweet love. It was one of the early scenes, at least. Sweet, sweet love to Nicolas Cage while his boyfriend watches. While her boyfriend watches. It's an insane movie. There are iguanas showing up everywhere that don't exist.
Because of drugs. That's because of the director.
Werner Herzog.
Who might be on drugs.
Pretty much might have forced fed Nicolas Cage actual drugs to make his performance that more amazing.
I don't know
about
the force part.
If you've ever watched Nicolas Cage movies and enjoyed Nicolas Cage being crazy, watch this movie, because it's where Nicolas Cage is literally crazy. All because of drugs.
He's the most.
And Werner Herzog.
So let's be clear. In three picks, you have stolen a movie, and this jerk has stolen it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. This well, I will go on.
To steal more of my movies.
I'm sure I will. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This is unintentional, though. Mm-hmm. Only the first one is unintentional. So, I think it's telling that on a list like this, Johnny Depp just has so many movies to choose from. My number three pick is Blow, which, I mean, it kind of speaks for itself. It's one of those rise and fall type of movies. It's, you know, it's just great. It's Ted Demme's last. It's pretty damn good.
Another great performance by Ray Liotta.
Yes, sir. Ray Liotta starring as Chris Walken, yes.
I like how you're still convinced.
Chris Walken is somewhere in that movie.
Alright, I was going to leave this for last, but why not? My number three pick is Bearfest. Hey guys,
I had that on here and I deleted it.
Hey guys, Bearfest is tremendous.
Is that why you got upset?
Yes, that's why I got extremely upset. Well, Bearfest is not the most serious of movies. It is clearly a movie about alcoholism and alcohol addiction. An Oktoberfest and racism and Das Boot.
Das Boot!
Still the best Das Boot joke I've ever heard or seen.
Isn't it bad that this movie, which is, as you say, about alcoholism, it ends with a promise of a marijuana, a weed addicted movie to come?
Yes, but that didn't. It wouldn't have been as funny. Pineapple Express tried.
And they.
If you think Pineapple Express is better than Bearfest,
I don't know if I'd say it's better, okay. But it's hilarious.
Yeah, saying they couldn't have made a hilarious movie. I'm just saying Pineapple Express took that and ran with it, and it's not as good as Bearfest. Bearfest.
My number two is possibly the most obvious pick anyone could make for this kind of a list, and it comes from one of, if not my favorite filmmaker that's currently working today, and it is Requiem for a Dream, the movie that makes you cry tears and call your parents and, like, admit things that you did that you never want to tell your parents. Because it... the level of depravity that this movie takes its characters in every form of drug and substance abuse that it shows, it just kind of, it makes you curl up in a ball and just want to not go outside anymore, not look at people anymore, because it's a sad movie, it's a depressing movie, it's a fucked up movie, and as Damien says, ass to ass.
You know what I think is the saddest part of this movie? The fact that Jared Leto really is not anything big. Jared Leto is great in this film, and I've seen other movies that he's in that he's pretty damn good, and he just, you know, amounted to, well, I wouldn't say he's amounted to nothing, but he really hasn't made a splash like I would have hoped.
Tell me how you market him, a movie with him in there.
I hear you. Okay. But that's, you know, that's how you find the next big guy. You look at those movies and you say, oh, he's good. Why don't I start? Look at, say, Jake Gyllenhaal. Did you think, coming off of things like Donnie Darko, that Gyllenhaal would become the man that he is today?
No, but then he got ripped and then they started putting him in action type films. Right? That was not the case.
Fair enough.
That's also how it goes.
Fair enough. Anyway, my number two film. As Damien said, it's not a traditional kind of film, and he has essentially broke the levy, the metaphorical levy of non-traditional in here. My number two film is actually. I think better than or worse than, it's worse than in the sense that it goes even further than Judge Dredd in this list. My next film is Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Because, now, while yes, there is a lot of drinking, there is a lot of smoking in this movie, is not where the addiction comes from. The addiction actually comes from the name of this film, White Castle. This movie is about what two young men are willing to do, willing to sacrifice, willing to put everything on the line for, in order to go to White Castle, in order just to get that one tiny burger. And
well, they did get around 50 of them when they got there.
Well, in the end, right? But this film is an ode to that establishment and the addiction that it requires from its patrons.
This will probably be my most serious pick, and it is kind of obvious. Scarface. Hey guys.
Yeah, that's on my list too. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get high on your own supply. you'll end up shooting your way out of a massive mansion and saying hello to small friends. And it doesn't end well. So Scarface. Douglas, do you think that there's people who were born before 1990 that haven't seen Scarface? Do you think people like that exist in this world?
If they do, they don't deserve to exist.
Yeah. Everyone has seen that movie. Even rap stars. They don't even watch television.
Actually, especially rap stars, funnily enough.
And that movie has... I don't understand why rich people have that poster up. And, you know, have all this reverence to Scarface. Because that movie's that... I mean, the lesson of that movie is the worst. These rich people have a giant Scarface poster. That movie is all about the detriment of excess. You guys have just looked all past that. Yeah, Scarface, son. You know he dies at the end of that movie. Do you guys understand that? But Scarface is terrific. And I won't say everybody should watch it. Because if you haven't at this point, just kill yourself. It's not. Don't listen to this or anything else.
So my number one movie is the most recent film on my list, and it's from director Steve McQueen. Yep. With his tale Shame.
Look, shocking.
I mean, if you have a movie starring Michael Fassbender and Carey Mulligan, we're going to be talking about sex addiction and how these two characters interact as brother-sister, where it's just this crazed idea of how this guy who is so easy to find the object of his addiction, it's hard to even fathom how much he has to put in effort for all of the ways that he has to force other people to play into his addiction. When you see prostitutes come in, when you see porn come in, when you see that eventual third act come in, it's something that makes you sink even further down into the sorrow that is this addiction. And I mean, people still make jokes about sex addiction. I don't even know how to comment on it, but this movie definitely makes it look as something which is...
It's not a real thing. I'll comment. It's not a real thing, guys.
Right. This movie at least depicts a story where you're like, this guy definitely has a problem of some
food
sort.
Food addiction, also not a real thing. You're fat. You're too fat.
Why isn't there a food addiction movie?
Because it is you can't market that. No one wants to see fat people on TV.
I guess there's that one scene in the Meaning of Life. Mm-hmm. Can we call that a food addiction movie?
Sure. Sure, Andrew.
Yeah. Douglas.
What is Douglas doing? Douglas, why are you on Meet the Fockers on...
No, it's not Meet the Fockers. It's Meet the Fockins.
Oh.
It has a 93%. Mm-hmm. It's a documentary about two 69-year-old identical twins,
mm-hmm,
who have worked in Amsterdam as prostitutes for over 50 years.
Good job.
Wow. Anyway, mm-hmm, why I started at Rotten Tomatoes was I was just looking for the page of my number one movie, which is Drugstore Cowboys, directed by one of my all-time favorite directors, Gus Van Sant. This movie stars Matt Dillon. It is just fantastic. It has that sort of Gus feel that I love from most of his films. It is not as bad as Elephant.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it is. It's very much a regular movie.
How much like milk is it?
Zero like
milk. Okay. I think I need to watch this.
It's great.
Although you could be lying.
I could be lying, but you won't know until you watch it. So watch the shit. I love this movie.
Pretend
I love this movie. Actually, it's kind of a toss up between this one and, you know what, other movie kind of like this that I love. But no, this is my number one. But I actually do love the Your Own Private Idaho, which again is Gus. But that one is Keanu Reeves and River Phoenix. But this one is great. It's really, you know, following some crazy druggies around and, you know, crime and violence and craziness ensues. And it's just fantastic.
All right. So I'm picking this movie just to annoy Andrew. The movie is Flight.
You know, I forgot about that movie. I totally and completely forgot about that movie.
All right. That is not actually my pick. Andrew won't invite me on this podcast anymore. My final pick is the Godfather series.
What's that addicted to? Power.
Yes. In the Godfather 1, he became rich. In the Godfather 2, he became even more so and could not be satiated. He wanted to be the biggest. He just having the power, just being, you know, the leader of this crime syndicate was enough. He wanted, you know, to get a blessing from the Pope. Like, all this crazy shit that he wanted. And there was just no end in sight. He just wanted and wanted and wanted. Until something so tragic happened that it broke him. And, you know, that is what true addiction is. You just keep going further and further and further. Until you hit. I mean, it's not technically bottom in his case. But that is what happened. There was just nowhere else for him to go. The worst thing that he definitely couldn't live without was the one thing that broke him. And it was just because of his insatiable lust for power. Because he had the money, he had girls, he had everything. And still was not satisfied. When you think about it, power is one of those things that once you get a little bit of it, like you've seen it time and time again, all you want is more. Like, you give someone power over anybody and they just take it to the as far as they can. You say, all right, Douglas, you watch over these two people. And 2 days later you come back and Douglas has them as servants.
They are my minions and they do my bidding.
I am in charge here. And so, yeah, I think Godfather. I was going to pick some Hitler movie, but that would have been too on the nose. Too easy. So yeah. There are some other movies that I have that I didn't talk about.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about honorable mentions.
Yeah. My honorable mentions are sad.
Cause why? Seriously.
I have a Matthew Vaughn movie in there somewhere.
I have Winter's Bone.
I have a Bradley Cooper movie in my honorable mentions.
Wow. If you say Limitless, me and you are going to have words.
You know it's in there.
I won't say Limitless.
Okay.
I'll just say that it's Limitless.
Like Winter's Bone, her situation was out of, you know, everybody in this place that she lives in being addicted to whatever they call that drug, that hippies. It is in the bushes.
You mean the same drug that they're doing in Breaking Bad?
Yep. Mm. And so while she isn't addicted, her entire life is, you know, kind of affected by the addiction of this town to this, you know, drug. And so I thought that was kind of clever. But then she isn't addicted. In fact, nobody. Her struggle is not.
Which movie is this we're talking about?
Winter's Bone.
Yeah, okay, so that's pretty
good. But there's the other movie from that director, which I still haven't watched, which I've heard is really an addiction movie called Down to the Bone.
Yeah.
Have you seen that, Damien?
Mm-mm. I've heard of it.
No?
Yeah.
Oh. But otherwise, on my list, I mean, I have Oslo, August 31st, which we talked about, which I thought was a really good movie, but it just didn't quite make the list. And also, I have Leaving Las Vegas with another Nicolas Cage movie, the one that he ended up actually winning the Oscar for, where he drank himself to death.
Yeah, I guess...
There's also Pusha.
There is Pusha, is there?
Wow.
Okay. Have you watched those movies yet, Douglas?
Nope.
My list included...
Nice.
Actually, now that I look at it, other than the movies that various people stole from me, the only thing that was...
The Dark Knight, Douglas, that doesn't have anything to do with
it. So when I speak of the Matthew Vaughn movie, you might think, you know, and probably rightly so, that it would be Layer Cake, but it's not. The movie that Matthew Vaughn directed that I had on my list was actually Stardust.
Mm-hmm. Because you're a crazy person.
I am a crazy person. It was one of those unconventional ones, you know.
Because you're addicted to it?
To what, no?
I am addicted to it. But because you've got these witches addicted to the star, and everybody's addicted to, you know,
Andrew,
the everlasting...
Feel free to cut this off whenever you're ready.
And that is why I did not actually put this on the proper list, because it's a huge stretch.
Yeah. That's a leap followed by a stretch and then an even bigger leap.
So anyways, that's been the podcast. You can always hear the podcast over at gmanreviews.com. We're also available via iTunes. The podcast is now also available on Stitcher.
Always hear it. His site is never down. 100% uptime.
100%.
Not even Amazon can claim that.
So when was there a downtime? That has to be referring to that. What
never
happened?
Been down, Douglas.
Something happened recently.
It has
never
been down.
Never.
Not ever.
You can find me on Twitter over at Gman Reviews. Douglas is at DJR Lost His Name. Damien is nowhere on Twitter. He's not found. We can't find him. We thought it was him, but he's lying to us. It wasn't him.
At Soccer Jersey.
I haven't seen that thing posted.
I found it funny that the moment I added you to Twitter and you started using it for like half a second, Soccer Jersey just became alive for a bit.
And then died again.
Yeah.
My job was done. Soccer Jersey is
dark. Yes.
No, your heart
is as black as night. Such a perfect time. But if I let you hang around, I'm bound to lose my mind. 'Cause your hands may be strong, but the feeling's all wrong. Your heart is as black. Your heart is as black. Oh, your heart is as black.